Simon for On the White, and we're here with
Rory Cox.
And we are at the sixth form at Ride, and you are the, well, it's been sort of called superhead, or a sort of a head over a number of schools.
Well, principal of Ride Academy, and the sixth form centre is next to the academy on a separate site, but it's all one school.
It's sounding very musical, tuneful in the background here. It's preparing for the art show tonight.
Yes, the students who are proud of their artwork are exhibiting it tonight, and parents are going to come and have a look, and also some children from local primary schools.
So the obvious thing that we're here to talk about today is there's been, I mean, it seems amazing. I'm sure for you it seems like a lot more than a week. Perhaps, I don't know, if it seems like there's a lot of news has been struck in the last week about the uniforms at Ride. And the line that you... Well, the line was there already, but the line that you enforced during that time. And it just seemed like worthwhile to have a chat. I don't know if anyone had really heard it from your voice of the way that things have been. And we've got a number of questions to run through that the parents have put to us or just brought up in general discussion. So the background really is... It was the 17th that the day of... Reckoning? I don't know. What did you call it? I don't know.
17th was Uniform Day. Some of the children mischievously called it D-Day for Dress Day, but it was the day that we looked at dress. And the reason we chose that day, I mean, there was a variety of reasons, but it was also just after all the Year 11 students had finished. We were having some concerns with some of the students were coming under inappropriate peer pressure with their uniform, and as the weather was getting warmer, they were asking that we do something about it, so it seemed appropriate to act then.
And that was primarily female students, was it, with skirt lengths?
Yeah, some of the girls were saying that they felt under pressure to wear their skirts shorter than they wanted to. And the reason for this is that the uniform code specifies knee-length skirts, but over time the skirts have drifted a little bit higher and the students have put each other under pressure. And when we became aware that some students were being effectively bullied over the length of their skirts, we thought we have to act and sort this out.
In that effective way of people saying, oh, you know, you're being square, probably there's a different word for it these days, but you're being square for wearing them so long.
I had a girl come to see me and she sat crying saying that she'd had enough. And I thought, right, we can't allow this to go on, because one of the most... kind of urgent issues that we focus on in schools is getting rid of bullying. And you might say we've been through a lot of turmoil over the last week, but actually bullying is worse. We're not going to have children upset and going home crying. We're going to deal with issues straight away.
And how many students are there in the whole of the school?
There's about 1,000.
Okay, and how many of those came to you and said, we're feeling under pressure?
Well, it was two initially, and then when we started to ask some questions, others were saying that they had been feeling uncomfortable, but they didn't want to talk about it. So we became aware that there was a bit of an issue across some of the year groups.
And one of the pieces I've read around, a lot of pieces obviously on this, one was describing not being able to see people's skirt from behind with a blazer length. I mean, I don't know how long a blazer was.
Yeah.
That seemed to me, well, I'm a parent of a 13-year-old, that seemed extraordinarily short.
Yeah, there were some that were far too short. But the difficulty we have is that if we say to a student with a short skirt that it's too short, and we show them the uniform code that says knee length, then the student turns around and points at other students whose skirts are just above the knee, and they say, they're not right either, why are you picking on me? So the issue we had really is to sort out the really bad skirts, we had to sort them all out.
And I guess... And I think I've read this, you saying that you have to pick the knee, because what else is there to pick to be the height? You can't say length, because people have got different body lengths.
The difficulty is that we know when they're too short, and we know when they're too long, so we need to find a midway point, and the only real midway point is the knees.
Right. That's interesting, too long. That's the first time I've heard about that.
Yeah, we haven't got a problem with too long skirts at the moment, but I know in other schools sometimes students who wear very long skirts can end up tripping over on them.
Right.
But I stress it's not a problem here.
Yeah. So the run-up to this seemed to be letters were issued in advance, people aware that 17th was Dress Day or D-Day or whatever it is that got labelled. And people that had written to us had said that they tried to conform with that, but had difficulty of supply, being the t-shirt company, not having stock.
We were talking to the suppliers back in the spring term about a number of issues, really, to do with the type of garments and the number. We invited some of the suppliers to come into school and talk to us, and our vice principal, Mrs. Price, went out and actually talked to some of the shops. So we've been trying to work with the suppliers to make sure that we have the right equipment there, the right dress. The governors as well have met with suppliers, and they've looked at some of the clothing that's being used. And Mrs. Price, our vice principal in charge of uniform, she wrote to all the parents just before the May bank holiday to inform them about really some of the uniform rules. And then I wrote to them on the 9th of July, saying that on the 17th we would be focusing.
June, I guess,
June.
So with the thing about the stock, were there other places that people could have bought stuff, or the parents did their best and just nothing was available?
Yeah, some of the parents who've come in over the last week to say that they've not been able to find things, or that there have been style or size issues. What members of staff have done is sit down with them and look together at some of the internet sites where dress can be obtained. And I think I've seen at least a dozen parents sitting with members of staff in the middle of last week going through looking at some of those style issues.
Okay, so they were available online, maybe not exactly locally, but online. What about the idea that with the summer holidays coming up, that people buying clothes now, they've got, I don't know, 10 weeks ahead of the growing, and I guess depending on the age, they could be spurting out?
Yeah, it's a good point, but I think what I'm also conscious of is that we have been talking to a number of parents for quite a while now about sorting out uniform, and we haven't managed to get it sorted. A lot of parents buy uniform over the summer holidays. So if we'd left this issue to the beginning of September, and we'd had a lot of parents buying really the wrong uniform in the summer holidays, and then if we'd come back at the beginning of September and sent them all home, I think parents would have ended up more upset because they would have spent money. So to some extent, it's possibly better to try and deal with this issue now, while the majority of the students are wearing uniform that was bought much, much earlier in the year. Get the issue dealt with before we've got everybody buying uniform. Get people clear about really what we have to have. And stuff bought now will still be fine for September and for most of the next year. And then any buying that does have to happen in August, I think people will be much more aware of what to buy.
I guess in some way, by having the turbulence now, we've got a clear run for the start of next term.
Yeah, I think there is some truth in that. And the timing, really, if we're honest about it, was because we're dealing with some of the student concerns, the peer pressure. But I do think doing it in this term actually is going to have a lot of benefits for the parents, because it means we'll get a sharp start to the term academically in September. Otherwise, we would probably have had 2 or 3 weeks of trying to sort out uniform. So again, better to get that sorted now.
And when you were considering this and thinking this is going to happen, did you imagine the level of reaction that this happened?
I know that uniform can be an emotional issue. And
you've had past experience of that, have you?
Yeah, I've had past experience. Other head teachers that I've spoken to have had experience of it as well. And I think one of the things that we don't want to do is cause unnecessary upset. But as well as that, we do have to have high expectations. We do need to enforce standards. And we do need to be fair to everybody. And sometimes being fair means trying to hold everybody to the same standard, even though there will be some children that are only just missing the standard.
Is it the philosophy is to do with the tying to rules? Do you think that's an important thing? Because you've been mentioning... to do with work, people were preparing people for the year world of work.
I think there's several reasons, really. Part of it is about preparing for the world of work, and that's really important. But another part of it is about enforcing standards and about just creating attitudes amongst the children of cooperation. And I'm just mindful that last Friday, Sir Michael Wilshaw delivered a speech at the Wellington Festival of Education. The speech is called Reclaiming Comprehensives. And he talks in there about the importance of a strict uniform code. You know, he imagines a parent saying, "Does it matter what colour socks my son wears?" And Sir Michael's view is, yes, it does. It's vital because it's about establishing standards.
And that's your view as well?
Yeah, that a very important part of the Uniform Code is about establishing standards in the school. It's not absolutely critical to have a uniform in a school because there are very successful schools that don't have uniforms. But if you are going to have a uniform, it's important to do it properly and to do it fairly.
One that that struck me, I saw it on the front of the county press, was appearing, you know, if you'd just seen the person, the bloke standing there, you'd have thought, well, they're okay. Mm. But he had a brown-coloured sole. Is that as simplistic as it seems that it was the wrong colour? Was it because it was a trainer? Or what was the rule that was being broken there?
I think several things. I saw a headline about 250 girls being sent home, and that's not...
We've had 750 okay. mentioned to us.
I was aware of 30 sent home on the first day, which generated 250 in the press. So I think that there's been some imaginative reporting, and I understand that's how the press works.
Have you been able to work out the maths behind that? 30 to 250?
Yeah, it's quite significant. And similarly, some of the photographs that have appeared in the press of children in incorrect uniform, some of those children I saw in school and were not quite looking in school as they then looked in the photographs. But on the point of the shoe, we did encounter some quite complicated problems about what is the difference between a shoe and a trainer, because there are some brands of footwear that have trainer bottoms and shoe tops, or vice versa even. And actually, I think the shoe market, as it were, has moved on over the last few years. And some of these issues in the past perhaps haven't been as sharply defined as they could have been. One of the things that we have to think about in schools is that the children, when they're walking around the school, they spend time in science labs, they spend time in design and technology workshops where they could drop tools on their feet. So it is important to get the shoe issue right.
So with this particular one, because my daughter looked at it and said, I understand that one. Mm. I'm sure a lot of people will be in the same confusion. Do you want to clear up what was wrong with that shoe? That it was viewed as a trainer? Is that what it was?
Well, I think what I'm not going to do is comment on any individuals, so I think that would be inappropriate.
It's on the shoe rather than the individual.
Yeah.
or just that. Let's take away that one then. Mm. Shoes with the trainer sole, the brown sole on it.
Just focusing on the principles.
Yeah.
I think what we noticed is that some of the shoes that had trainer style bottoms, the issue of the colour is not so important, it's the trainer style, then had issues about the amount of protection they were offering to the feet on the top. So I think what's quite important to us is...
So you mean that their foot being potentially malformed in some way?
Or not offering protection in a science lab or a design and technology workshop. Because, again, I think we're just trying to be mindful that the children, during an average week at school, their feet actually can come under threat in lots of different ways. And it's important just to try and keep those shoes safe. The key focus, though, was to try, at this point in the year, and deal with skirts. And dealing with skirts, we then had to deal with trousers, because some of the children said, I'm not going to wear a skirt, I'm going to wear a trouser. And as we were doing that, we noticed there were some issues with shoes. And I think it's an issue that we're going to have to return to, because there are some very, very complicated shoe styles out there that are a combination of shoe trainer. Some of them, I think, are absolutely fine, but we've noticed some styles where you can have two pieces of footwear and they actually look similar, but the nature of the material is very different. So one shoe offers substantially less protection on the top than the other. So I think what we've become aware of is that we need to work through some of these issues shoe by shoe, as it were, case by case. We're putting a gallery on our school website of shoes, and the gallery is growing by the day. We've got one member of staff...
Ticks and crosses against them.
Yeah, to say, this is a shoe. And I know that might sound a little bit strange that we have to say this is a shoe, but there are pieces of footwear out there that are a cross between shoes and trainers. It is becoming important to try and define some of these differences. And they do get down to very detailed kind of distinctions between, well, if this one's a shoe, why is that one a trainer? It is quite complicated.
I guess, and with those, I mean, I remember myself in those years and children being what they are, then there's the opportunity, once there's a lot of rules in place, to try and find the holes in those rules to then...
Yeah.
be the rebel?
And I think, normally speaking, there's always a degree of tolerance around the edges of rules. But the problem that we were dealing with is that things had gone quite badly wrong with the skirts, and we needed to get that sorted out. The skirts got far too high. And when you're dealing with a difficult issue and people say, it's not fair, you're picking on me, what about so-and-so, then actually we have to deal with everything.
Right.
Once we've got it all back to where it needs to be, which is now, then I think we can actually move back to a more normal situation with the uniform. Because I think whilst there are still some unresolved issues with shoes that we're working with people on, we certainly haven't got any more short skirts.
Right. So that's interesting, you're mentioning about the 30 people being sent home inflating to 250 or 750 or however large the number became. There was a stage before those people got sent home where they were gathered in I think it's an exam hall, is that right?
Well, what we did is children came into school and we started the school day just in their fire evacuation position, so we could just look at the children that had their shoes right, the trousers or skirts, whatever the issues were. And then children that had issues to be dealt with, then we used the desks that were currently set up for exams, and the children worked there while we worked through the issues. And I know, again, there's been some strange stories about children lined up against walls and hands on heads, and we had a phone call from someone asking whether we had a dungeon. The reality was that the children sat at the exam desks that the children use for doing exams. Nothing unusual or strange there, nothing cruel or dehuman, unless you consider exams to be cruel and dehuman.
Many people do.
I think all we did there is use the equipment that we already had out. The children worked there and really working in the way that they would if they were out of lessons for any other reason on a normal day, while we could get to grips with the issues.
So they were, you sort of went down the line and said, okay, that, you're not complying, go to the exam room.
Yeah.
And then went through them, they sat down, you went through them individually, something wrong with your skirt length's wrong or...
Yeah, it was important, I think, to try and give each student and then families a sense of what is the problem and what needs to be done about it, because in some cases it was quite complicated. We might have a student who's got a skirt issue, and then it could be due to a number of issues. Maybe the student's grown, or there was an issue in the purchasing of it.
Or the rolling up, which is the sort of standard thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I think probably what we'll find going forward in the future is that we'll be perennially talking to children about skirts rolled up and rolled down. And that's not a problem, because once we've reset the expectations that they should be knees, then we can have that conversation.
And what did the reaction of the pupils like when you said... I mean, I guess that normally there's a hardcore that know what they're doing is transgressing. And we spoke about the rebel side before. And then there's some that get caught up in it, or some that just don't realise what's going on. What's the general reaction?
Well, I think what we have to remember is that the vast majority of children had no problem with their uniform and have been perfectly happy. And I did a series of assemblies with the children last week, and the first thing I said to them really is thank you. You know, you guys here are all correctly dressed, you're absolutely fine. I think sometimes in schools we spend too much time focusing on problems and we never remember to say thank you if we get it right. So thank you to the silent majority. Let's now work through the issues we have with some individual children. And some of the issues were about uniform, but in some of the uniform issues, the real problem was not the uniform, it's the attitude. It's about attitudes of cooperation, attitudes of respect to authority. And again, in dealing with those uniform issues, we're actually laying down the foundations for behaviour that we want around the school and in the classrooms. And I don't think it's any coincidence that over the last week we've had the best behaviour in the school all year. Teachers, I've had five teachers come up to me and say that behaviour in lessons is absolutely perfect. And part of that is because the school has asserted itself, it's asserted authority and said to the children, there are lines that you must not cross.
That's very interesting. And I'd noticed that in one of the other interviews you had, there was talk about how lateness had improved dramatically over, I can't remember the period, maybe a year or...
Over a year.
It seemed to go from what to me seemed like quite high levels, 1,300 and something, down to 300, which is a heck of a reduction.
Mm. And I think we're conscious that all these little issues that sometimes people say are trivial issues or little issues, they're actually vitally important in changing attitudes. And what we want to see at the end of the day is good exam results, children learning. But the things that make for good learning in classrooms, some of it's about good teaching, but a lot of it's about good attitude from the children. And I've seen over the years schools go wrong where children argue about where they sit, or you set them work and they'll half-heartedly do it, they won't really have good attitude. And that's something we're going to change, because we, over the next 2 years, are going to show significant improvements in exam results. It starts by getting the children to understand that they have a part to play in this process as well. So on the surface, it's about uniform, but actually underneath that, it's about cooperation. It's about, to use an old-fashioned word, people doing what they're told.
That's interesting. I mean, on the way here, I was wondering, in my having my cynical media head on, whether in some strange way having all of that publicity was a marketing tool, actually, in that you would attract the people and the parents who want to have their children, one, the children who want to work and happy to comply within the rules, or secondarily, the parents who want them to do that. Coming along to the opening, maybe.
No, if we wanted a marketing point, probably we would have chosen to do it in September, because that's much closer to the opening evening. It's about getting our own school properly in the right place to do well in the future. If parents and other children want to come here for traditional values, then great, you know, let them come. But I'm not particularly interested in setting out to attract people here. What I'm interested in at the moment is about making sure we offer the best quality education for the children that we have got.
One of the things that was in the Telegraph was that you'd spoken to a number of the teachers. Now, this is the Telegraph that was quoting 250 people. So I just wanted to find out, had you spoken to teachers about their attire as well?
I think there was a little bit of a misunderstanding there, in that some of the things that I thought I was saying to the Telegraph was about children, and it's about getting the children's dress right. But having said that, we do ask staff to role model for children, so there is a role for staff to play. The example I gave to the Telegraph was staff wearing their jackets around school, that we all take our jackets off when we're warm in our classrooms, but staff put on jackets when they walk around the school, role modelling to the students to wear their blazers around the school. What I've never asked staff to do is to dress like the children. You know, one of the little mantras we sometimes use is that the staff are role models, not mannequins. You know, you're not there to show the children school uniform. And similarly with some of the footwear that staff wear. If a teacher of, say, English or history wears particular shoes, then that might be very, very appropriate to a classroom, but those same shoes are not appropriate to a child who has to go into science labs and design and technology workshops. So I think there was possibly a little bit of a misunderstanding in some of the stuff that appeared in the press. But we do ask our staff to dress well, to role model to the children.
Yeah, I guess, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, do you think it went as you, well, one expected? Do you expect to have that reaction, to have it quite so intensively on the island media? It went and over social media, it grew pretty fast. And then to have the parents turning up the next day, I guess some of those were... It's interesting, isn't it? Because the perception of that could be the parents turning up because they were outraged at the way their children being asked to wear these uniforms. Whereas, in fact, I don't know, perhaps you can come to this, whether it was they being asked to come to sort their children's clothes out. And then getting to a national level as well.
Yeah.
How much of that did you expect?
I think we were aware that whenever you do a uniform issue, it can raise emotions and it can be newsworthy. But we didn't set out to be newsworthy, and I'm very happy for things like this not to go into the press, because actually it's quite a distraction. We want to focus on improving the school. We've got a lot of things that we're doing on a day-to-day basis. Having a media situation is a distraction. You know, even the fact that we're spending time now talking about it is time that we could be using to do other things in the school. But having said that, I recognise that a lot of parents were concerned, so it is right that we do talk about it.
So how much of that did you anticipate, that the people coming along to film crews outside the school and then it going front page of the county press over other media sources. Did you expect that?
I thought it might generate a story somewhere in some of the local press. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I expected front page. I suppose I should be honest. But I think that's a sign of how much interest there was in the story. And when you do uniform issues, you can have a lot of interest. I think we were a little bit surprised by the way some of the stories ran, and I think possibly some of the stories, some of the details in the stories not being correct, probably added to the newsworthiness of it. But again, our focus was on trying to do what's right for the children. If it ends up in the news, okay, let it, because what we're trying to do is what's right for the children.
I guess you must be encouraged by the governors being supportive of you. You know, they put out a letter, you do know, they put out a letter saying that they were supportive of your actions, and it must feel reassuring for you to know that.
Yes, I talked the uniform issues through with the governors, and our chair of governors, Leslie Holmes, has been very, very supportive. And I think they're conscious, because they talk to parents often, they're conscious that there have been some concerns expressed about the uniform, and that it was time to resolve the issues.
On a general point, you have mentioned before the idea of improvements. Mm. The Ofsted report recently was moving in the right direction, and improvements are showing that. What's your general feeling on the way, it being specific rather than generally, well, we want to improve the way that things are going?
Our key focus this year really has been improving the quality of teaching. You know, it's what teachers do in classrooms on a day-to-day basis, because that's our bread and butter, really, as a school. And over the year, we've seen basically the quality of teaching of a day-to-day basis improve by about 30% over the last year.
So you judge that on results, do you? How do you?
Lesson observations, so going and looking at what the teacher is doing, looking at the assessment results of classes. We had some classes last year that were doing very, very poorly. This year we've seen dramatic improvements. So we're starting to see the beginnings of some very significant improvements. I'm not sure we'll necessarily see a lot of improvement in the exam results this year, because some of our Year 11 children are carrying into those exams results which they took in Year 10, and in some cases in Year 9, 2 years ago. So the results this summer are going to look quite mixed, because there's all sorts of different year groups worth of exam results mixed up. But we're looking at our Year 10 students who will be doing GCSEs next year, and we're seeing some very, very hopeful signs there.
And they've been running mocks, have they? Have they got that far, Year 10s, I can't think?
Yeah, broadly speaking, we do mini exams or tests every 6 weeks in the school, and we look at the data, we churn it up, and if specific children are not doing well enough, then we go back and we have conversations and say, what's going on here? We talk to the teacher and we say, you know, do you need any help as a teacher? Or it may be that the teacher says, well, I'm very concerned about this child, you know, give the child some extra help. So every 6 weeks we look at that. Next year we're bringing in a new thing where twice a year we're going to have exam week. So we will run the school day a little bit longer. It'll happen in January and in June. And our students will spend a week at each point doing formal exams. Part of that's about assessing where they are. It's also about teaching them how to do exams. It's teaching them about revision and all the techniques that go with it.
Rather than the sort of the fright of sitting in an exam, just thinking, goodness, I didn't expect this.
Yeah, because I think getting good results in an exam is, let's say, 80% about knowing the stuff. The other 20% is knowing how to deal with the exam. So it's about being able to sit calmly in the room and not panic. It's about reading all the questions, you know, not forgetting to answer the last page, that kind of stuff. So there is a certain amount of technique that we need to teach children in just how to do exams, because for some of them it's their first exposure to stress, and it's teaching them how to manage that. And for us as a school as well, having exam weeks, we can get a load of exam papers done, we can send them off to other schools to get them marked, so we get objective marking. And it's great training for our teachers as well, because during those exams we can have teachers sitting in teams marking and standardising and getting the grading right.
So you think the Year 10s that are going through now will be the ones that will really start to show the benefits of the teaching and the school and the discipline side?
I think we'll see some improvements this summer, and improvements in specific subjects. Next summer, though, I think we'll see a leap in a lot of subjects, because the focus at the moment has been on getting the A to C grades right this year, because some of the subjects that wasn't right. The focus for next summer is getting the A and A stars right, because as a school, I'm not satisfied with how many A's and A stars we get at GCSE. I'm not satisfied with how many students we're sending to universities like Oxford and Cambridge. We should be aspiring and aiming much, much higher. And the first part of that is to get more children to get A's and A stars.
What happens about the children who are below C grade? Because I have been told, and all I have is somebody explained this to me, that some schools, because the A to C's are the ones that are important for performance of the schools, focus on the children that are the D grade, because the more that you can get up into the C, then you're into the magical bracket. What happens to the ones that aren't able to do that or aren't achieving those grades?
That's a good question. I've oversimplified a little bit in what I've put to you, because there's also an A to G measure, which measures students who can't get C grades. But also I think there's some big changes coming next year in the way that schools are measured. It'll start next year and it'll kick in for the first time in 2016. But all the children who start GCSEs in this September, the schools will be measured in 2 years' time on the progress that the children make. So even if children are only capable of getting a G grade at GCSE, schools will be acknowledged for that achievement. So I think actually this is quite a welcome change to the way league tables are going to be done. And I think you'll see schools beginning to change very, very significantly their focus, because you will no longer be rewarded for aiming for the middle. Now, I think for the first time, the league tables will reward schools for treating all the children the same way.
So it'd be a sliding scale rather than just a cut-off at C?
Well, the way that the league tables will work is every child has a notional level at the end of year six in the primary schools. So for all the subject areas, children will be expected to get a certain grade at GCSE dependent on where they were in year six.
Wow, that's pretty hard to predict, isn't it?
It is quite complicated, but the government have got big computers where they've churned numbers for years and years. And, I mean, broadly, there's 750,000 children in each year group cohort. So every set of exams, they get 750,000 set of numbers going into the big computer, and they keep churning it. And it produces graphs that show what would normally happen, all things being equal. So there is some very, very complicated data out there now, which good schools are starting to use to make sure that all children get the chance to succeed.
Okay. I think, I mean, that does eliminate that thing of putting all the resources into the people who are on the DC borders, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's a good thing, actually. I think it's a very, very welcome change that the government has made to the league tables.
The final thing is about... perhaps it's to do with the uniform or certain presentation style, deportment, effectively, the way that people are sitting. And people saying that if they are, I don't know if they were held behind or not sitting in the correct way, then they're hit with another hour of sitting properly. These are things that get passed around, so I'd like to know the situation around that.
For classroom behaviour, again, one of the things that I ask the children to do when they're sitting at desks is to keep their knees under the desk, to make sure that they're facing forward. A simple rule there is just keep your shoulders parallel to the desk edge. And the reason we ask children to do that is that if they're sitting side onto their desk or slouching, often they then start chatting to the person next to them because they're looking at them. And one of the things I found looking at disruption in lessons is that we can get rid of 50% of the normal disruption that slows down lessons by just making the children sit on their chairs properly and face the front. A lot of the things that deliver great learning have actually got nothing to do with the learning and everything to do with the environment. So get them sat on their chairs properly, make sure they've all got pens and pencils, make sure they can see the board. You know, other simple rules like when the teacher is speaking, children must be silent. And one of the things we say to the children is not quiet, but silent. because again, one of the things that goes wrong in classrooms sometimes is that people can't hear what the teacher's saying. And if the teacher says do exercise 20 and people can't hear that, then they're not going to do exercise 20. So I think we do talk to children about the things that make them successful in lessons, but I haven't heard of any detentions for not sitting on a chair properly. I mean, it's just one of the things we tell children to do.
And this idea with a straight back, what, is that linked to that, or that's an exaggeration of the facts, or this shoulders parallel to the desk? I mean, that's sitting square.
It's common sense.
Yeah.
I haven't heard of any straight backs, and I haven't asked anyone to have a straight back. From a health and safety point of view, it probably makes sense. I have spoken to some of the children about how they wear their bags, because some children have them on long straps, so the bag is low down on their back, and it gives them back strain. So in some cases, I've suggested to the children, shorten the straps, wear the weight higher up on your shoulders, and it'll just feel more comfortable. So
my daughter went through a period of doing that. It drove me crazy. But I guess that's fashion, and that's one thing. Where is the space for self-expression of the students? With so many rules, where do they get to express themselves?
Children only spend about between 25 and 30 hours a week in school. So it's less than 1/7 of the week at school. And I think there's still room for imaginative children to express themselves. You reminded me earlier on that children like to roll their skirts up, and I'm sure they always have and they always will. So there's always room for self-expression. But I think what we've also got to be conscious of is that children get one chance at education. And if there are silly things in lessons that are making the learning less effective, then we need to deal with that. And even if it makes us very unpopular and it gets us people saying nasty things about us, if we can see a reason for what we're doing that we think will improve the learning, what I'm hoping is that in 5 years' time, 10 years, 20 years, there will be children with qualifications and life chances that they otherwise wouldn't have, because teachers here had the courage to deal with issues now that make them unpopular. And I think that's a good thing.
And looking forward like that, it makes it sound perfectly sensible, doesn't it? As you're saying, that what can be wrong with giving people opportunities that, of course, when you're at that age, you can't necessarily see that, but there is that important thing. Do you think you'll be here for that long at the school to see those benefits?
I think I'm conscious I've got a job to do. I've got to get the job done. I think it's a foolhardy person that tries to predict the future. There's certainly work to be done over the next year or two. I would like to see through a good set of exam results so that there's a sense that people can see what we've done and what it's led to. But I think the most important thing at the moment is that we focus on the children, that we try to get the children in the right place, that we focus on recruiting teachers. And again, one of the issues with uniform that is quite important is that recruiting teachers is a very competitive market. We put out adverts, other schools put out adverts. When teachers come to our school, we need them to see a school where children behave well, the children are polite to the teachers, they hold the doors open for them, and then teachers that come on interview accept jobs. So again, one of the strategies for getting the best teachers in front of the children is making sure that good teachers want to teach here. And we are competing against other schools.
And is that something that you're being successful at, pulling people from the mainland? Because there are obviously on the island there's a pool of people quite often circulate, I understand. By those people, the teachers being respected, you can see, well, that'd be a big tick. If you're serious about teaching, where would you rather be? Somewhere that you can be effective, or somewhere that someone's going to be rude to you? I can understand that completely. Has that translated in you being able to bring teachers on from the mainland here?
Yeah, I brought over about 4 teachers over the last few months, you know, really top-notch, very, very talented teachers from the mainland. I've also got some Canadian teachers that are interested in teaching here. Initially, they were worried about working in English schools because there's been some lurid headlines in the press about English schools having really bad behaviour, and the teachers were nervous to come here. But what I've said to them is, come and have a look. And what you have to know is that you have my absolute commitment that if any children are messing around in any lessons or bad-mouthing you, they are out of that lesson. Because making sure that teachers can teach is absolutely critically important to us. And I think that message is starting to circulate, and we're starting to get quite a lot of speculative applications from teachers. teachers want to teach her. And again, I think you'll see over the next year or two that if we establish a good reputation as a school that teachers know they can come to and teach in, then the quality of teaching will improve because we'll attract really good teachers.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure.
Thank you.